Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really diving into the ROI of open source, specifically in your marketing stack. And we're focusing pretty intently on Dinnerfeed. It's this platform that's making some big promises about ending, well, the hidden costs of vendor lock-in and those rising prices for customer communication. Our mission today, especially for you, the learner listening in, is to really pull apart how a platform like Dinnerfeed gives you that crucial escape hatch from expensive systems. We're going to break down the features, you know, journeys, embedded components, all that stuff. So anyone, really, whether you're a CTO or maybe a marketing specialist, can get the technical benefits and just the sheer flexibility it offers.
Flexibility really is the key word, isn't it? When we talk about customer engagement, what we mean is the whole infrastructure that automates, well, pretty much every message between a business and its users. That covers the marketing side, think newsletters, those onboarding campaigns, and also the transactional stuff, you know, receipts, password resets, appointment reminders, all those critical messages. And Dinnerfeed's goal here is quite straightforward. It's be that comprehensive omni-channel layer, so handling email, SMS, and more. And crucially, doing it as a genuinely developer-friendly and, well, sustainable alternative to the big proprietary names like, say, customer.io.
Okay, before we really unpack this whole open source angle, which sounds fascinating, we need to give a quick shout out to the supporter of this deep dive, SafeServer. SafeServer handles software hosting, and they support your digital transformation journey. They make sure your, you know, complex infrastructure is solid and reliable. And they specifically help with hosting software just like Dinnerfeed. You can find out much more about how they can support you at www.safeserver.de. So big thanks to SafeServer for supporting us. Now let's get back to those core problems you mentioned, especially that threat of vendor lock-in. For businesses maybe burned by older providers, what does that trap actually look like day to day?
Oh, it looks like paralysis, really. Vendor lock-in, it happens when the cost and the sheer complexity of moving all your user data, your messaging setups away from one platform just becomes, well, prohibitive. Too expensive, too risky. So you end up stuck. You're often paying these ever-increasing fees based on volume because the operational headache, the risk of actually moving, is just too high.
Right. And what's really interesting here is how Dinnerfeed tackles this head-on using that open source philosophy. It's not just software. It feels more like an insurance policy.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. They actually call it the escape hatch. See, Dinnerfeed is MIT licensed, the source code. Completely open, totally free. So users can start with their cloud offering, which is super convenient for getting up and running fast. But crucially, if they ever face, you know, aggressive price hikes, or maybe their compliance needs change, they have a clear documented way to switch to self-hosting it themselves. And this is important, they actually provide technical support to help with that transition.
Okay, but let's be real for a second. When you trade volume-based pricing for self-hosting, aren't you potentially swapping one kind of headache for another? I mean, managing infrastructure like ClickHouse and Temporal, that's not trivial, right? What's the real trade-off?
That's a really important question. The trade-off is definitely management complexity, yes, but what you gain is ultimate control. And for many organizations, especially those handling sensitive PII, you know, personally identifiable information, or maybe those with really solid engineering teams, that control is absolutely worth the effort. Think about those payroll and HR companies mentioned in the source material. They explicitly chose Dinnerfeed to hedge against lock-in. Because for them, being trapped isn't just a cost risk, it's a security risk too. They much prefer owning their data, owning their infrastructure. It guarantees price stability and compliance basically forever.
That makes a lot of sense, investing in control. So structurally, who is this really built for? The sources seem to stress that while it's architected for massive scale, like millions of users, the UI is deliberately kept simple enough for non-technical team members to actually build and launch campaigns. So it sounds like it's for almost any organization needing triggered messages.
Exactly. And we see it being used really effectively in some pretty cutting-edge places, specifically in DevTools companies, right? Their head of growth teams found Dinnerfeed, well, indispensable for their product-led growth tech stacks, their PLG stacks. By automating really high-quality onboarding sequences, they actually cited a direct improvement in time-to-value TTV for their new customers. And that's huge because it directly boosts conversion rates. It sort of bridges that gap between engineering power and marketing execution.
Bridging the gap. Okay, that leads us perfectly into the low-code toolkit. Section two, how this automation actually works under the hood. The idea seems to be once engineering hooks up the data initially, the marketing and growth teams can pretty much run with it, building complex sequences themselves.
Yeah, and to understand how that automation works, especially if you're maybe newer to this, You really just need to get your head around three core components. Think of it like a low-code recipe book that runs itself once you set it up. So first, you've got Journeys. This is your main automation canvas. It's a visual drag-and-drop interface where you map out these multi-step, multi-trigger sequences. But it's not just a basic flowchart, you know, that's smarter than that. It includes things like integrated branch-based analytics, so you can actually see how tweaks affect performance right there. And it respects local time zones, which sounds small, but it prevents those really embarrassing middle-of-the-night messages going to users across the globe, a detail older systems often get wrong.
Okay, Journeys makes sense. Visual flows. Next up is Segments. This sounds like where the real targeting power comes in. For a beginner, maybe think of it like super advanced Excel filters, but running live against user data.
That's a perfect analogy, actually. Segments are exactly that. They're the tool you use to slice and dice your user base. And it's based on what they do, their actions, and who they are, their properties. So you can combine things like, say, viewed pricing page and event with identified traits like subscription status, trial expired. The real power comes from the unlimited and/or conditions. It lets you get incredibly precise. You go way beyond just blasting an email to everyone subscribed. Instead, you target like everyone who viewed Feature X twice this week but hasn't finished setting up their profile yet. Hyper-targeted.
Got it. Journeys for the flow, segments for the who. And finally, the message itself has to live somewhere. That's templates, right? The content layer.
Exactly. Templates where you craft the actual message and inject that personalization magic. And users get flexibility here, too. They can use a sort of Notion-like low-code editor, which is great for quick content. Or if they need more control, they can dive into full HTML or MJML for really polished designs. The key ingredient is the liquid syntax they use for personalization. That's pretty much the standard way to securely pull in user details, name, company, maybe their last login date, making sure every message feels relevant and tailored.
Okay, before we jump into the more technical setup, let's talk reach. Because we're not just talking emails here anymore, are we? The sources emphasize this is truly omnichannel.
Oh, absolutely. The platform handles standard email and SMS directly, out of the box. But its real flexibility comes from webhooks. Webhooks act as this crucial integration bridge. They let you trigger a message or an action in almost any other system. We're talking mobile push notifications via another service, maybe messages in Slack, WhatsApp, even custom internal tools. This means one single automation journey can reach the user wherever is most effective, whether that's a welcome email or a critical password reset alert pinging their phone.
That unified approach seems like a perfect lead-in to Section 3, which sounds like the real aha moment, especially for product developers. Embedded components. The sources mentioned significant savings in engineering time here.
Huge savings. Yeah, think about building a customer engagement platform inside your own product from scratch, you know, complete with a decent template editor, a segmentation engine, a journey builder. It's a massive, massive project. Embedded components let developers take any part of the DittoFeed dashboard, the journey builder, the template editor, whatever, and embed it directly inside their own sauce application. And technically, it's pretty straightforward. They offer either a simple iframe or an unstyled React component. So imagine if you sell, I don't know, a business analytics tool, and your customers need to send messages based on the insights from your tool. Instead of building that messaging feature yourself, you can just embed DittoFeed's components. Instantly, you offer your customers a full marketing automation suite.
The source material mentioned building this internally could take a year or more, a whole year. For listeners maybe not deep in sauce development, why is replicating something like a good template editor or segmentation engine so time-consuming?
Right, it's not just the initial build effort, which is significant. It's the ongoing maintenance, keeping up with features, dealing with all the edge cases. Building a resilient segmentation engine means handling potentially vast amounts of real-time data, complex query logic, performance tuning. Building a good visual editor means wrestling with UI/UX, versioning, email client rendering quirks, which are notoriously painful, and keeping APIs updated. So yeah, that year or more estimate sounds about right for getting something robust, plus, like the source says, the ongoing maintenance headache. Embedded components let you sidestep that entire massive cost and effort.
And clearly, this isn't just aimed at small startups needing a quick fix. For larger enterprise users, DittoFeed offers some pretty robust control features. It's noted as the only open source platform in this space offering programmatic control over multiple workspaces.
That's right. And that control is absolutely essential for, say, agencies managing multiple clients or large companies with different brands or divisions. Programmatic control means you can manage these workspaces via API, ensuring complete data isolation between each client or brand. Plus, they offer white labeling and custom branding options. So when you embed these components, it looks and feels seamlessly like part of your application to the end customer. Very professional.
Okay, let's shift gears slightly and look under the hood. All this front-end flexibility and low-code stuff needs a solid foundation. And it sounds like this platform is really built with the developer, the engineer who appreciates modern tech, in mind.
Oh, definitely. While the user experience aims for low-code simplicity, the core infrastructure is seriously cutting-edge. It's a TypeScript application running on fast, scalable tech. You've got Postgres as the main database, ClickHouse, which is brilliant for handling high-volume event analytics really quickly, and Temporal for managing those complex, long-running workflows reliably. This kind of architecture is vital if you're going to handle potentially millions of user events streaming in. And the developer focus extends to how you interact with it. Full REST API access for getting data in and out, plus an admin API specifically for managing workspaces, programmatically key for automating setups. And they provide SDKs too for web, Node.js, React Native, just to make that integration work smoother for development teams.
I also noticed a focus on quality assurance and control, which sometimes gets missed when tools focus purely on speed. Things like branch-based Git workflows for managing campaign changes. That sounds pretty sophisticated.
It is, and it's crucial for teams working collaboratively or needing proper version control and rollback capabilities for their messaging campaigns, just like with code. And alongside that, there's a testing SDK. This is really cool. It lets developers write automated tests for their messaging campaigns that can run in their continuous integration, their CI pipeline. This means you catch errors programmatically before a broken campaign ever reaches a real user. It avoids that nightmare scenario of trying to manually QA complex journeys in a live production environment. Saves time, protects users.
And obviously, tying right back to our initial points about control and security, the ultimate developer feature. The ability to actually self-host the entire platform protects sensitive PII inside your own walls.
Exactly. It brings that control full circle. Control over the infrastructure, the data, the compliance, all the way through to the campaign logic and testing.
Okay, looking just briefly ahead now. The roadmap for 2025 shows they're not standing still. What are some of the key things coming down the pipe?
Yeah, it looks like they're moving towards more sophisticated ways of modeling users and relationships. For the first half of 2025, a big focus is on user grouping. This will let the platform understand and segment based on collections of users think like members of a specific team in a B2B app or users belonging to a particular club. It's really important for many business use cases. Then, moving into Q2, they're planning identity resolution. This is super important for stitching together a user's journey across different devices or before and after they log in. So connecting that anonymous browsing behavior with the identified user profile once they sign up, it gives you that complete unified view of the customer.
And further out, any plans mentioned to make the low-code side even faster or smarter?
Yes, for Q3 2025, they're looking at integrating LLM's large language models. The idea seems to be using AI to help generate initial drafts of journeys, segments, maybe even message templates based on natural language prompts. So speeding up that campaign creation process even more for marketing teams, letting them prototype faster. So if we kind of pull this all together, what does it all mean? I think the big takeaway is the Ditto feed offers this knowledge hedge, perhaps. It gives you huge flexibility and that crucial self-hosting control to guard against rising costs and vendor lock-in. But it does this while also providing genuinely powerful low-code tools like journeys and segments that let teams move really fast. It's about maximizing power while minimizing that proprietary risk.
Right. Considering that combination guaranteed price stability from the self-hosting option, plus potentially saving, you know, a year of engineering time by using embedded components, here's a final thought, a provocative question for you, the listener. How would redirecting those resources, the budget saved on volume pricing, the engineering time saved by embedding instead of building, how could that let you genuinely accelerate your core product development next year? What could you build if you weren't maintaining messaging infrastructure? That's definitely something powerful to think about, reallocating that focus. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into Ditto Feed. And one final thank you to our supporter, SafeServer. They assist with software hosting and digital transformation. You can find out more at www.safeserver.de.